Separating the policy from the politics, delving deeper into what is happening in our world today, and sharing the information you may not know if you didn't listen to this show. iHub Radio presents The Lovable Liberal. This is the Anita Rufus Show, civil discourse on current events and politics. Here's Anita.
Just remember, you won't know if you don't listen. This is Anita Rufus, the Lovable Liberal. Thank you for joining me. I am live on Thursdays from 1 to 3 in the afternoon here at iHub Radio. The show is repeated on Saturday mornings, Sundays, and podcasts are available wherever you get your podcasts, or you can always plug into a podcast if you go to my show page on the iHubRadio.com website. I want to talk a little bit about what's going on with Donald Trump and with the Republicans, because it's almost impossible to not talk about Donald Trump. And one thing I want to say is, when Trump supporters tell you who they are, believe them. Michael Flynn, who briefly served as Trump's first national security advisor, and is a retired general, for God's sake, to whom we pay a healthy pension every year. He appeared at a QAnon conference in Dallas, Texas. And that's where you've probably seen this on the news. He was asked by one of the audience members, "I want to know why what happened in Myanmar," meaning Myanmar, "why what happened in Myanmar can't happen here." Now, what happened in Myanmar was an old-fashioned coup. Flynn said, "Well, there's no reason. I mean, it should happen here." And then later on, when people started hearing exactly what he said on the tape, he said, "Well, no, I didn't say that." Now, there are some people who are saying, "Excuse me, but when a retired general says that he supports the idea of a coup in our country, why are we still giving him a pension instead of prosecuting him? And why aren't more conservatives and elected Republicans more horrified by this?" And it made me start to think, watching the way that the Republican Party has been approaching some of these issues and some of these wacky people who claim to be Republicans. It made me wonder, what voters are the Republicans trying to encourage? For example, they know that they lost some of the elections that led to the Democrats having however slim a majority in the House and Senate, that one of the groups of voters that the Republicans lost in this last election were suburban women. Well, they may think suburban women are soccer moms who just stay home and get supported by their husbands, but then they're not facing reality. And the truth is, just this past week, Republicans filibustered in the Senate a bill that would have made it easier for women and for LGBTQ workers to sue for pay discrimination. How are they going to entice female voters to support them when they aren't even supporting equal pay for women? And another thing that really disturbs me with what the Republicans are doing politically, I'm not talking about issues now. You know, I try and separate policy from politics. Politics is fascinating, and I love it, and I've been involved in it for many, many years. And it is a profession, and it has its own dynamic. But it's not the same thing as policy. With everything we have seen happen this past year, since George Floyd was murdered, It seems that the Republican strategy for the 2022 elections assures that race and racism are going to be central to their political debate. They don't want to deal with it as an issue. They don't want to try and dig into whatever we know we mean by the term systemic racism. In an era where every topic turns quickly, unfortunately, to race, Republicans see this as a divisive issue, as an election winner, because it pits mostly white Republicans against the very diverse Democratic Party. Now, this is not to say that Hispanics or African Americans, this isn't to say that Asians aren't also Republicans, but not in the kind of numbers that make a difference within the party where they feel it's necessary to at least take into account the concerns of those groups. And Republicans are more and more focused on giving money to and helping to organize local elections for school boards, pitting mostly white Republicans against this very diverse Democratic Party. And think about this. In surveys that have been done recently, half of white independent voters, those who don't want to align themselves directly with either party, half of those voters, white independent voters, say that the media is exaggerating stories of police brutality and racism. Now, I don't know that they're exaggerating them. They certainly are focusing on them in ways that we have not seen that focus in the past, partly because of what happened with George Floyd and partly because we're now getting pictures. 2 out of 5 white independents say that social policies, including affirmative action, are discriminating unfairly against white people. So it's no surprise that if we're talking politics and not policy, the Republicans see these divisive issues as election winners. And that's what they tend to call cultural issues or social issues, as opposed to the issues that really matter, like equal pay. Issues that really matter can be influenced and directed as a result of national policy that is adopted in Congress. Congress makes the laws. Now, we also have this reality that all of a sudden people are very upset, and it is a manifestation of this idea that we need to use race as the social issue that will get us back into office. This is such a cynical approach to politics. It divides us in ways that are not productive. And they're complaining about the fact that, well, this idea of teaching our actual history in school and raising children to understand our real history, that's dangerous. That's dividing us. Why on earth are people afraid of learning the truth? Why would learning our history somehow be called an intention to make white people feel bad? They're making my white child in school feel guilty about things that were done before that child was ever even born. Well, I don't think that they should feel guilty. I think that they should take responsibility for the requirement to change policy in a way that will overcome what happened in the past. And you can't do that if you don't know what happened in the past. Now, Mitch McConnell, the leader in the Senate, who has said, not unlike what he said when Barack Obama became president, he has said his primary goal is to make sure that Biden doesn't get his agenda pushed through the Senate. And now a super PAC that is aligned with McConnell has decided they want to intervene in Republican primaries and challenge people who have been recruited as Trumpsters to run for office. So McConnell is not totally on the Trump team. What he wants is the best candidates who will then support whatever he wants to do, not whatever Trump wants to do. Now, you know, President Trump did begin his rallies again this past week, and he's now going after Fox News because in the aftermath of what happened, the insurrection on January 6th at the Capitol, Fox News fell into third place among the cable news broadcasters, because most people who watched what happened on January 6th were so appalled, and they wanted to hear the news coming straight from people who would give them the straight news, which they don't usually get about things like that from Fox. Well, Trump jumped on the bandwagon and started blaming no less than Chris Wallace, because how dare Fox tell the truth about anything? Now, you know, there was a report that came out this week about what happened on January 6th. And it turns out that the Capitol Police did have intelligence that indicated that an armed invasion was going to happen on January 6th in Washington, D.C. We also know that that was partly because President Trump's big lie kept getting pushed out there over and over and over and over and over again. And President Trump himself was saying, you have to take your country back. Trump supporters had planned an armed invasion in the weeks before January 6th. And there was a bipartisan Senate committee that brought out this report. But they only looked at January 6th from the perspective of the Capitol Police and what they knew, and the intelligence services and what they knew. It was, however, the most detailed timeline that we have had of the communication and intelligence failures that led the Capitol Police to be unprepared for what happened on January 6th. They thought it was just going to be another Trump rally. Instead, it was an unprecedented attack on American democracy, the most significant assault on our Capitol in more than 200 years. And we should not allow it to be trivialized or described as anything other than an insurrection, because they stormed the Capitol to stop a legitimate constitutional act by Congress.
She's lovable, she's liberal, and she's here to bring a tone of civility to political discussion you aren't likely to find anywhere else. The Anita Rufus Show, with your lovable liberal on iHub Radio. Here's Anita.
I want to share with you a news item that I found that I thought was really just priceless. Many of the people who have been charged in the January 6th attack on the Capitol have blamed President Trump for their actions, saying he riled them up with his claims of election fraud and his promises to join them in fighting it. Well, his continued refusal to accept the results of the 2020 election is actually now helping keep some of those supporters behind bars. You have to appreciate the justice system. U.S. District Judge Amy Berman Jackson wrote in an opinion where she denied bail to one of the people who was charged. She said, "The steady drumbeat that inspired defendant," meaning this guy who participated in the insurrection, she said, "the steady drumbeat that inspired this defendant to take up arms has not faded away. 6 months later, the canard that the election was stolen is being repeated daily on major news outlets and from the corridors of power in state and federal government, not to mention the near daily fulminations of the former president." She denied bail because she said, hey, you're claiming that you did what you did on January 6th because President Trump told you you should. Well, he's still out there telling everybody they should. So I'm not letting you out of jail. I love that. Now, I want to talk briefly about some voting issues. First of all, I did mention earlier that there are 361 bills to change voting laws in 47 of the states. And in my view, voting should be as easy and as inclusive as possible. Personally, I think even criminals behind bars should be allowed to vote. Because if they did something wrong and they're paying the price, they're still American citizens while they're in jail. And just because they may have robbed a grocery store doesn't mean that they don't still have perhaps a very well-informed opinion about who they want running the country. And just so that you know that this insanity of trying to limit voting does not exist in all of the states, Senator Angus King, who is an independent from the state of Maine, he votes and caucuses with the Democrats. He said, in Maine, we have no voter ID laws. We have same-day registration. We have no excuse absentee voting. We have mail-in voting. We have early voting. We have 24/7 drop boxes. And we have virtually no fraud. He said expanding ballot access doesn't encourage fraud. It encourages voting. Three cheers for Senator Angus King. And I will also add, in the state of Vermont, the governor of Vermont, who is a Republican, signed legislation to send mail ballots to all registered voters for general elections. And frankly, it should not be easier to vote in one state than in another. Just the same as nobody should be treated differently under the law in one state versus another. Now, individual states pass their own laws. There are even some municipalities that pass laws in their own city. But there are federal laws because people must be treated equally under the Constitution. Now, in Nevada, they have a Democratic governor, Steve Sisolak. He signed a new bill that expands mail-in voting to all registered voters. And it requires local election officials to send out mail ballots before a primary or general election. He said, at a time when state legislatures across the country are attempting to roll back access to the polls, I am so proud that Nevada continues to push forward with proven strategies that make voting more accessible and secure. Nevada is the sixth state to roll out automatic mail-in voting. And it also allows for electronic devices to approve signatures on mail-in ballots. so you don't have to have somebody sitting there and trying to visually compare a signature on a registration form with a signature on the ballot. Now, you know, Texas is trying to pass really strict voting restrictions. The Democrats walked out and didn't allow them to have a vote. The governor's probably going to call a special session. But the Attorney General of Texas admitted out loud that if they had had free and generalized access to absentee ballots in the 2020 election, Biden would have won the state of Texas. And the Attorney General was saying that as a way to pat himself on the back, in essence saying, we did the right thing. We didn't expand that kind of voting, and therefore, Biden didn't win our state. Good heavens.
The Lovable Liberal continues now on iHub Radio. Here's Anita Rufus.
Now, as nice as the people in Canada are known to be, a couple things that happened in Canada this past week were very disturbing. Justin Trudeau, the Prime Minister, condemned the concept of Islamophobia this past week at a vigil for a family where four members of the family were killed and a young boy was injured by a driver who targeted this family for their Muslim faith. The Afzal Salman family. Terrible, terrible tragedy. And one of the stories that just turned my stomach and made me cry, although everything makes me cry these days. I don't know if you saw the story about the indigenous children who were listed as missing from what was known as the Kamloops Indian Residential School in British Columbia. Canadian flags were put at half staff after the remains of over 200 indigenous children were discovered at a mass burial site. And this was one of those schools in Canada, and not unlike the reality, this was also happening in the United States. But Canada had forced an estimated 150,000 indigenous children to go to these residential schools. They took them away from their families, and they had to live at these schools. And the purpose of the schools was to assimilate these kids so that they would be good Canadians instead of whatever they were considered in their own culture. This commission was established in 2015 and now believes that well beyond 10,000 children died or disappeared as a result of things that were done in the name of assimilating them into the Canadian culture. A veterans group official has resigned over the fact that, in fact, he's an American Legion, head of an American Legion post in Ohio. He resigned after he cut a veteran's microphone during a speech that the guy was giving about how black people organized the first Memorial Day commemoration on record. They asked him to modify his speech, and he chose not to do so. And he was supposed to leave out that part about the history of Memorial Day. Well, he chose to deliver the speech the way he wrote it, and they cut off his mic. What are people so afraid of in learning the truth? And this is another kind of scratch my head response to that same question. Most United States police departments are not sharing their information on the use of force. The FBI is trying to create a database on police shootings. and only 27% of local and federal police agencies are giving them information. Why are they afraid of the truth? Which brings me to the whole issue of private militias. We even have them here in California. An Air Force sergeant was accused of killing two law officers in California last year and was part of a right-wing militia in California known as the Grizzly Scouts. They held firearms training, they scouted protests, they laid out terms of war against the police. The Santa Cruz Sentinel newspaper cited court documents that show that the suspected gunman, Stephen Carrillo, was not acting alone, but was a member of an anti-government group that was preparing for deadly attacks on law enforcement. They loosely identify with that group we heard about with regard to January 6th called the Boogaloo Movement, where they wear Hawaiian shirts. God. This was a group that also discussed ways to stir up violence between Antifa groups and the police. This guy said he was totally down with disguising himself as an Antifa member and sparkling a violent conflict. Because we have to make sure when we believe so strongly in something and we're willing to take a violent stand against the government, by God, we want to make sure and blame others. We've heard a lot this past week about the drought and how severe it is and how large an area it now encompasses in the southwestern states. And I was shocked to find out the drought is so serious that at least one-tenth, one out of every 10 of the world's mature giant sequoia trees were actually destroyed by a single California wildfire last year. This is nothing to take lightly. You know, even though we don't necessarily live near an area where we have giant sequoias, you may never have been up to the national parks up there to see these incredible, majestic trees. But when one-tenth of them were destroyed by a single fire as a result of how serious the drought is in California and in the other southwestern states, this is something we have to take very seriously. Because what's the alternative? Oh, yeah, the alternative is to go somewhere else. Forget about planet Earth. Jeff Bezos is going to space. He's got this new initiative called Blue Origin, which has a rocket that's going to be shot up into space next month. He's taking along his brother, and they're having a raffle, evidently, for people who have bid on one person who will be a passenger on that flight going along with them to outer space. This is one of my favorite stories. You know, this is Pride Month. And there was a Facebook post put up by a Texas bakery that had made these really cute little heart-shaped sugar cookies. And they had put the bright colors of the Pride flag on them. A Texas bakery in Lufkin, Texas. Well, as a result of them posting pictures of the cookies online, they got all kinds of hateful messages and pushback. How dare they make cookies that enshrined the colors of the rainbow flag? One customer who had ordered 60 cookies to pick up the next day canceled the order. So this tiny little bakery in Lufkin, well, it turns out that supporters from all over the state of Texas and all over the country bought out all of their cookies. The post read, "More love, less hate." This bakery said, "Happy Pride to all of our LGBTQ friends. All lovers of cookies and happiness are welcome here. Three cheers for those who helped them sell out all their baked goods. Do I have the name of the bakery? Oh, and no less than Mark Cuban's brother got in touch with them and wanted to know, did they mail out orders? Because he was going to put a permanent order in to make sure that they, well, it turned out they didn't have that kind of capability. And he's now talking about investing and helping them get an online mail business. So if you want to follow up on this, it's Lufkin, L-U-F-K-I-N, Lufkin, Texas. The name of the bakery is Confections. And what a great story. I just love that. The state bar in Texas is investigating their own attorney general because they want to see whether Attorney General Ken Paxton's failed efforts to overturn the 2020 presidential election based on the bogus claim of fraud in the state of Texas, whether that amounted to professional misconduct. So the state bar is investigating their own attorney general. Here's one of those stories that makes me just laugh out loud. One of the alleged insurrectionists on January 6th in the Capitol, who had grabbed a megaphone and was shouting that the police were protecting pedophiles, because you know the QAnon theory is that all of the insiders in Washington, D.C. are pedophiles who are drinking the blood of children that they kill to try and convene with Satan or whatever the crap is. Well, this guy was, his name is Sean Michael McHugh. He's 34 years old. He was convicted. Now, remember, he's screaming into a megaphone that the police are protecting pedophiles. Turns out that in 2010, he was convicted of one felony count of unlawful sex with a minor. Oh, God, you can't make this stuff up. He was 23 at the time. The victim was 14. That makes me feel dirty just reading that story. I have one word for people like that. Yuck! And then I want to ask, whoever said crooks were smart? Global law enforcement this past week announced a three-year operation in which they intercepted over 20 million messages. Hundreds of arrests were made in more than a dozen countries. Tons of cocaine were seized. Millions of dollars. And it turns out that they were all using this telephone hookup that they thought was a private, quiet, dark web kind of way to communicate. It had been set up by the FBI. Whoever said crooks were smart? Sisters are doing it for themselves. There are 41 companies on the 67th annual Fortune 500 that are led by women CEOs. I like these kinds of stories because it's the Fortune 500 and 41 companies have women leading them. That is a damn small percentage, but it's better than it's been in the past. For the first time, two black women are running Fortune 500 businesses. Roz Brewer is the head of Walgreens Boots Alliance, which is number 16 on the list. And Thasunda Brown Duckett is heading a company called TIAA, which is 79th on the list. And the highest ranking business ever on the Fortune 500 being run by a female CEO, Karen Lynch is heading up CVS Health, which is number 4 on the Fortune 500. Congratulations to these women. We did a show with a guest a couple weeks ago that made it clear that statistics and every study that's been done show that companies and even departments that are run by women tend to have better results, and people are happier working for them in general. This is Anita Rufus on iHub Radio.
The Lovable Liberal continues now on iHub Radio. Here's Anita Rufus.
Okay, I want to end the show with some really good news kinds of things. First of all, this young woman I'm going to talk about, her name is Verda Teta. And she is the reason I want you to internalize that the next generation is going to be just fine. Us old people need to get out of the way and let them do what they're going to do, because they have a sensibility about the world that we don't even understand. And this young woman is the reason that I think the next generation's going to be fine. Her name is Verda Teta. She was graduating high school. She has been accepted at Harvard with a full bore scholarship. And she was also given a $40,000 award from the state. She got up at her graduation and she said, if we're honest with ourselves, some of us were born with the odds stacked against us. She's graduating from a high school where most of the students are economically disadvantaged. She said to every immigrant child, you can make it. Her family came from Ghana and they managed to make it. She's going to Harvard on a full scholarship. She asked the school, her high school, to give her $40,000 award from the state to a deserving community college student who would not otherwise be able to get that kind of an education. This next generation's going to be just fine. And here's one of the reasons why I love teachers. Devarius Peters was graduating from Butte, Louisiana High School, but he was blocked from entering. This 18-year-old kid was wearing the purple cap and gown, but they said his shoes were wrong. The lady who was letting people in, she pointed at his shoes and said they violated the dress code and that he couldn't attend his graduation ceremony unless he changed his shoes. They were supposed to wear dark dress shoes. He showed up that day in black leather sneakers with white soles, and he said, I thought I could wear them because they're black. As is he, I might add. Well, John Butler, 38 years old, is an educator at the school whose daughter was also graduating. This teacher approached the woman hoping that she would let it go, but she insisted on not letting the kid in. So without hesitation, Mr. Butler bent down, took off his shoes, walked into the graduation ceremony in his stocking feet, and said this was the most important moment in that kid's life, and I wasn't going to let him miss it for anything. That's why I love teachers. And now I want to share something with you that you may not know about. Do you know who Les Ballets Trocadero de Monte Carlo, who they are? I have seen them because my mother, who always wanted to be a dancer, had raised me to appreciate dance, and I love ballet. And I especially love classical Russian traditional kinds of ballet. It's very hard. I took dancing ballet when I was very young, and it's very hard, and especially for people that do it on point, standing on the tiptoe. Well, I was lucky enough to see Ballet Trocadero once because they had ballet in the name, and I thought, well, I certainly want to see them. Well, let me just tell you, it is an all-male ballet company, and they are all highly trained. They dance on point on their toes. They wear tutus and wigs. They play all of the female roles as well as the male roles. And they are hysterically funny. Seriously. Even if you have no concept of what ballet is supposed to be or whether you like it or not, they will make you laugh out loud, and they're really good dancers. So I had been to see Ballet Trocadero several times, and I thought it was just a really cool idea of an all-male dance group pretending to do traditional Russian ballet. I never knew, because I am so dense when it comes to these things. Ballet Trocadero, by the way, they call themselves the Trocs. The Trocs originally started up in response to the Stonewall riots. They are all gay, and they are drag, and they are all highly trained ballet dancers. Most of them have had experience in other formal companies in the past. They have to learn all of the regular classical ballets. So, for example, when you go to see a production of Swan Lake, there are certain conventions to the way Swan Lake is danced. And you don't change them because the choreographers who put together these ballets, they have a tradition. Well, these guys have to learn all of the classical ballet. And I just always thought they were really good at doing ballet. And the fact that they make it funny just makes it that much more fun to go and see them. But it never occurred to me, because I am so dense about these things, it never occurred to me that they were all gay and that they were doing it as a drag put on in response to the Stonewall riots that set off the entire gay movement to begin with. I had no idea. Well, for those of you who might like to be exposed to something that you will absolutely enjoy, the Ballet Trocadero de Monte Carlo, the Trocs, are going to be here in the Coachella Valley on January 31st at the McCallum Theater. Tickets will go, because anyone, unlike me, who knows what these guys are doing, will love to be there to see it. When I was a kid, about 4 years old, my mother started me in ballet dancing lessons back in New Jersey before we moved to California. And I originally studied with Monsieur Bakefe. And when we came to California, it turned out he had a sister who was also a ballet master, Madame Bakefe, and I went into her class and studied ballet. I didn't have the ability. I didn't have the grace. I was a gawky, skinny little kid, but I did learn to appreciate ballet. And when I tell you, these guys are brilliant dancers and well worth seeing. The McCallum Theater, January 31st, the Ballet Trocadero. Don't miss it. It is wonderful. And this is Pride Month, and we all ought to take pride in all of the people in our lives, many of whom who have had to live with real pain as a result of wanting to just be who they are. I'll be here next week. I hope you will join me. This is Anita Rufus, the Lovable Liberal. You're listening to iHub Radio. Have a good week. Oh, and I will leave you with this. Don't wait for your ship to come in. Sail out to it.